Session number 4868, Horting Monday, part 47.
And so when we attack them, well, there you are. That's what I told you on them tapes there. Blokes were laying all about in no man's land when it got broad daylight, and I looked back after I'd gone through the first line, second line, and it was all open country, but there were none of us left. Yeah?
Sorry, let me just do this so I can understand it sort of carefully. You got to the slit trench.
Yep.
You then got out the slit. The officer
yep.
said, get out the slit trench.
Yes.
And you kept going.
Yeah.
And you kept going to... You walked up to the... And you hit the barbed wire.
Yeah, right across no man's land, like got in there barbed wire.
Now, how did you get through there barbed wire?
It must have been blue to smithereens. I told you I fell over in the start. But you sort of scratched that barrage that ours had put on had blew their barbed wire to smithereens then, put it that way. Barbed wire all over the place.
And
yeah.
Then you went through the barbed wire?
Went through there till I got to their front German lines. There was nobody in it. I don't know where they were or what. There were nobody in, well, not just where I was, because it was still dark. Not dark, but the smoke and the early hours of the morning, you see. Well, you couldn't see a lot. It was just getting light. And, when I got to that front line, I jumped over their trench, you see, the front line. Nobody there. I jumped over that, and then I steadily walked... You're like in a dream. I wandered on. I never see a soul, nowhere, either side, nowhere. Till I got to their second line, then I told you what happened there. That was a strange affair.
Well, we're gonna take you through that if you can again. But one thing. When you were walking on your own,
yeah.
Was there much noise around? Was
yeah,
there
like... you could hear the shells bursting. Their shells, I don't know where. They were kept up their barrage. You could hear the... As you went across, you see, they'd put their barrage... Air barrage was lifted. You see, they lift a barrage. See, they slap a barrage on their front trenches. And that's allowed so long, you see. When it's all mapped out, but it never works out right. And then after so long, that barrage is lifted and dropped onto their second line, see? And then they plaster all the back of that, you see, so to allow you time to get there, which it never works right. But that's how it's all programmed out. Yeah.
Okay, now if you can just take us through it once again. The day was what? What day was it?
May the 3rd, 1917.
And dawn breaks.
Yes, it was just before dawn then, to be exact. That's when battles always start.
When you'd arrived at the second, German second line...
Yeah, that's what that funny thing happens, I told you.
Well, pretend you haven't told me before and tell me again.
Well, when I got to that second line... I got right up to it, within half a dozen yards, a German stood up. See, well, I was surprised to find one there, being none in the front. This German stood up. Now, what I can never understand is, he hadn't got a rifle, but he got a shovel. Now, he got that shovel and he threw it at me. And I wasn't no farther from here to that door away from him. And he threw the shovel at me, and as he threw it, I sort of tried to jump out the way, and I fired straight at him. Like that. Now, this is what beats me, and I've said so many times, how the hell it happens. I fired at him, not half a dozen yards away, and I was a first-class shot, and I missed him. What do you think of that? As close as that, and I missed him. And now, he jumped up, soon as I fired, he threw the shovel, turned round, jumped up out the back of the trench, and I'd missed him, and of course I took it steady then. I simply quickly slammed another round in, took a steady aim, and I shot him straight through the middle of the back. Because he went straight down, and just as I fired that, there were one of our officers come along the back of me. And he must have been pretty close to see what I'd done, because he said, "Good shot." And then he went straight on behind me somewhere along the line, further along the line. Instead of going forward, he went straight along by me. I know, I thought at the time, I thought, blimey, if you'd have seen first one I aimed at him, you'd have thought it wasn't a good shot. But always remember that chap. I've been sorry ever since. Bloody wicked game. When I walked by him, because I had to walk by him to keep straight on, he got both his arms spread wide out and his legs spread out and lay flat on his face. And as I just so I walked by, he didn't have a shiver. Lay still. Yeah. If that, I can't see anything ellerly proud about that, not today. Now, if that bloke could have put his hands up, I'm certain I couldn't have shot the bloke. But no, he threw a shovel at me and turned around and bolted. Well, I've got to do it. Well, you'd have done it in any case. You don't think what you're doing. No, I'm sure you don't. No, I shot him in the back. Yeah. And later on, as I told you, I shot two more. And
let's take you through it. So you walk past this man, and then what happened? Pretend you haven't told me it before.
I went straight on then and dropped in a shell hole. As soon as I'd shot him, within a minute or so, it went as quiet as a grave everywhere. And the smoke, because the sky were full of smoke from bursting shell. And that cleared. I bet I hadn't gone, not from here to the corner. I know I hadn't gone that far, not from here at the corner, from their second line, because I could tell when I run back later on. It come up, it was as clear, the sun shone, and I dove straight into a shell hole. As soon as I could, shell holes was everywhere, like a pepper box, as the saying is, shell holes everywhere. I dropped in one of them and I lay still. Didn't move. It was quiet. Nothing happened. Not a sound anywhere. And I told you that I turned around and looked back across no man's land. And well, I told you before, it was a massacre. They laid there all over the place. They'd been mowed down. I laid there and, in the first place, I looked straight in front. And there were nothing there, only all lovely open country, green, open fields, big fields right in front, and nothing. And then behind in no man's land, it was a massacre. Yeah, I laid there for some time. And I told you, I see a bloke walking about. I bet that one a couple hundred yards away, walking about. Oh, because I couldn't resist that. I took a steady aim and down he went. I waited, I pulled my rifle back in the shell hole again. I lay still for a long time. I had another look and blowed if there wasn't another one just the same walking about. And I thought, oh Lord. It was easy. Being a good shot and all, no trouble, whatever. I took a steady aim and down he went. But oh, blimey. I'd hardly began to pull my rifle back in the shell hole when, the dirt flew all over. I'd been waiting to see where the firing come from, you see, but I reckon that were the sun shining on my bayonet. See, it glistened, and they spotted me pulling that bayonet back in. No, I daren't move then for a hell of a while. I lay still, I daren't move. No. Well, they riddle that or scrap the dirt at the bottom of the shell hole and chucked it up in front of me, and you know, because you were just low enough to be below the level of the ground then. Well, I didn't have to chuck some dirt up. And, well, following that, this, I heard somebody shout. And it was one of our chaps. He was, he come running across. I looked up, I said, I was just saying, there's no room in here, kid, but no good. I'd got that machine gun trained on that shell hole where I was. And it was, and down he went. And so I said, his head, he was outside and his head hung over on my shoulder. And it teemed of blood. I didn't wear it him in the head or where, I couldn't tell you, but it was soaked. My sleeve and shoulder, and I'll tell you what I'd done. I dragged him in the shell hole, pulled him in to me, and I said before, dirty trick, I shoved him up in front of me. Well, that's what happened then, and well, as I told you before, I lay there all hell of a while before I dare look out anywhere. And then when I did look out, I told you, there they was a coming to relieve the Germans. And they was in as long a line, like a long line, formation, not running, but just slowly walking. Just slowly walking gradually along there as if it was a Sunday parade. And there wasn't a shot fired from our lines. There wasn't a shell from our artillery fired at them. Just let them walk. Yeah. Well, because it's obvious there were nobody in our trenches to fire at them. They was all empty. All dead empty. Nobody in them whatever. All where we'd left, you see, come from. The reserves, they'd be right perhaps a mile or a couple of miles behind. But there were nobody in them trenches. No, and when I see them, I thought, hell. I got up and I ran like hell. They tell you they shouted, I heard somebody shout, come in here, come in here. So, you know, where the shouting come from, I made a dive straight for it and jumped in. And
where were you, in a slit trench? Or
no, in one of their, in their second line. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that was the German second line trenches. See, we'd gone beyond their first line and gone beyond their second line. See, and what odds and ends there was left of us, what I run back to was in the German second line, you see. We'd gone beyond there first and second. Yeah. That's where I got tangled up, as I told you.
Wait, well, again, pretend that you haven't told me it before so that we can get it down here on good tape.
Ah, now then. Well, when I jumped in there, in that trench, I looked round and there was four British officers and three privates. Now, how the hell four officers got together, I do not know, and I never could tell, never since. Well, there was those four officers and three privates and me, made eight all told. Now, they stood in a bunch, these four officers did. And these other three chaps, close by, you know, saw in a heap. And the Germans couldn't have been 200 yards away, not much more then, in the long line. And one of these officers was saying, what should we do? See? He was asking them whether to put up a fight or pack in. That was it. That was the gist of the talk. And nobody answered at all. Well, I did. I was a silly bugger. But nobody knows. You can't tell. But I don't know why, but I couldn't help it. I said, well, before we went over the top, our colonel told us. His last words was, don't stop till you get to Berlin and do not take prisoners. I said, that was his words before we came over. That was our colonel. I said, and if they've been told the same as us, I said, well, we might as well go one way as another. Well, this officer that had been asking the question, I reckon he was a senior officer, he must have been. And he said, that's all I want, that's all I want to know. And so we did then, we all fired straight in front of us. At this long line coming along, we all fired direct at them, straight in front of us, and they parted away and come straight by us, each side, and they never blooming well stopped to look at us. Walked straight by us and filled their front lines up and left us in their second line, because they didn't bother. They knew very well we could never get back. They knew we should be picked up. They knew we couldn't get back. And that's what happened. And of course, as I told you later on, what happened with air shelling and all that.
Well, if you can, take me through it. It isn't too much trouble.
So that'll get me wind a bit.
Okay. Yeah. We have a rest. We'll turn it off, shall
we? Yeah, turn it. The day before the war we broke out. Remember anything else? 1st Bucks Battalion. And they were the old territorials, you see. And they marched from here. They didn't go by train, they marched to Dunstable, and from Dunstable marched down into near Portsmouth. And then from Portsmouth back to Chelmsford. That's the Bucks territorials. Mm. But what you've seen was I've seen the pictures of it. I remember at the time anyway, you know, the old photos, that they're all marching down to Wolverton Station, all in a parade out of the Wolverton Works. Mm. And they went to Cowley at Oxford.
Yeah, that's
see?
Right. That's it,
yes. I got it now, I know. That's who right. That that's is. Yeah. They went to Cowley at Oxford. Yeah, that's the mob, but the territorials was different altogether. They was what you call joining the army style. That was when it was voluntary. Yeah, that there was a lot of photos of it. Then they had the band. They told me they had the band to march them down to Wolverton Station. And they loaded them up, and there was a train load, and they went from Wolverton straight to Oxford. And there they went in the Oxford and Bucks Light Infantry.
Why didn't you ever join the territorials?
I didn't want it. I wasn't interested. Well, I was always in athletics, you see, and I didn't want it. No, well, there was a good many of them as went in the Terriers, used to be in the Boy Scouts, because that hadn't been formed long. And then they formed the territorials following the old volunteers, as you call it, Bucks volunteers, territorials. And then they built this drill hall at Wolverton then, just about that year the war broke out, I think, the old drill hall. And because a lot of the young chaps joined it then, because you see they had a week or a fortnight's holiday, free. Well, in them days, you see, a young chap, you had your week's holiday in the works, you got no pay, no paid holidays. So there's several of the young chaps joined that so they could have a week's holiday for nothing. That was one of the main reasons.
Presumably they actually got paid for going on holiday. Did they get any pay for being in the territorials?
Oh, no, but you see, when they went to camp, when the terriers went to camp, they had army pie, Bob a day. Yes. Yeah, the army pie they had there.
Did you take much of an interest in the manoeuvres in 1913?
Yes. Very interested. That was what... it was ever so interesting. We used to watch it. And they used to let us youth, because their main camp was in, it's all built now, ain't it? Back of Victoria Street, all them fields, that's where the camp used to be. And at Stratford, there were thousands and thousands of troops around here, manoeuvres. Well, they used to let us civilian youth go into their canteen for a drink, you see, like of a night. And that was the object, was to get us to join the army. Quite a number did join. Quite a lot of local chaps joined the army before the First War.
What were you particularly interested in? What sort of got people out?
What? The youth.
Yeah, what were you particularly
Well,
interested
it
in?
Was... Let's see now, the main thing, those that was that way inclined, was athletics. And then the other thing was dancing, the old Saturday night dances. That was one of the main things, but there was no other amusement, only what you made yourself. There was no cars, electric, pictures, wireless, telly, nothing, you see, only... You done that, and then do a bit of fishing in the river, or bathing. You could go bathing where you like, because there were no bathing place. Go in a river and have a swim, do a bit of fishing, and some weekends, old Joe Scragg and me, once several times, we used to go over to Worston and walk over there Saturday, go fishing. Have a night at the Wharf Inn. That was only a few coppers, bed and breakfast. Get up and go fishing in the morning, then went back, walk back here Sunday, often a weekend. Little things like that. And then several of us was always training for athletics, because in the summer there was a sports meeting everywhere. You could go to a sports meeting every Saturday. It didn't matter, you needn't go as far away as Birmingham. You'd get sports meeting in Bletchley, Aylesbury, Leighton Buzzard, Watford, and all round that way. Then the other way you had Northampton or Bedford, and every Saturday there was a sports meeting. They was advertising what they call the Old Athletic News. That was a big paper then. And you'd pick a meeting out, you see. And that, there was athletic clubs everywhere.
You were in which one?
I was with the Wolverton IAC. In later years, I was on the committee and formed the tug-of-war team for the Wolverton IAC and all that sort of thing after the Second War. But before the First War, there was athletic clubs everywhere. Northampton Athletic Club, Bedford Athletic Club, Leighton, Aylesbury, all different towns had their own athletic clubs. So they supplied athletes for meetings everywhere, you see. Because Wolverton Athletic Club, I bet there'd be 50 or 60 members, see. Well, then of a Saturday you'd pick out a meeting somewhere. Might be Banbury or Aylesbury or somewhere, and away you'd go. See, and then go about the country. That was one of the main interests. Yeah.
When the troops came on their manoeuvres in 1913, did you actually have athletics matches with them or not?
No, but I'll tell you what they did do. They did on one or two. They was only here a few weeks. They put on a big show down the park, a boxing show there. That's right, they did. I remember that, and there was several army champions, you know, and they give exhibitions. I remember that down in the park, yeah. But I can't remember anything else.
As a young man, you know, you looking at the army and so on, you went up and saw them and had a drink in the canteen. What was particularly interesting for you up there?
Well, it seemed great. You know, it seemed like a marvellous life. And, because it was glamorous in them days, you know. See, because there were none of this motorised stuff. You fancy, as a young chap, a local chap, seeing a bunch of cavalry, eh? Giving exhibition of what they call pegging, is there some, I don't know. Cavalry, they show you a batch of cavalry galloping along there, you know, and with a pegging, I think. They had a lance, you know, the lances, yes. And peg and pick the peg up and gallop away. Well, that was a hell of attraction for us young chaps. And then on top of that, you see the smashing uniforms they used to have. All gold braid and all that, you know, and the spurs. And it was hellishly fascinating. It's all very well today. It's a laugh today. They only laugh, look hell at you, talking like that. But that was it. There was nothing else about.
What effect did they have on the female population, all these soldiers?
Well, I can't say as there was anything special. No. I can't remember any Brattle girls marrying them, now then. Now you mention that. Blowed if I can. No. No, I can't remember it. Oh, let's wait a bit. No.
Well, was there much jealousy between the local lads and these...
No, none whatever. None whatever. They all mucked in with you and, you know, made you ever so welcome. You go up there and watch them go into the big camps and that, and they let you wander about just as you liked. And they was all pally with you. I'll tell you what, now I come to think of it. Oh, well, of course I do. I was in the canteen. And me and old Sid Carroll were talking to thee. This was before the war, of course. Talking to some chaps in there. And we saying how nice it was in the army. And we thought we'd like to join. I remember now one of them turned to us. He says, "You keep out the bloody show," he said. "Keep out of it." See, because it was a tough life, you know. You're grooming horses and all that. And it was only a bob a day. See, so I mean, I remember one of them blokes telling us, "Keep out of it."
But, I mean, why would people join the army if it was such a tough life? There was no war, there was no glamorous places they went, were there?
Well, now I can give you a good answer to that. If you got in trouble, the first thing you'd done to get away was join the army and get out of it. Cut a long story short, and it's happened, I know, at Brattle, in at least two occasions in them days. A couple of chaps put girls in the family where they done a bunk and away they went. See, that sort of thing, getting the army out the way. And if you couldn't get a job, join the army. Because it looked fascinating on paper. Outside the engineers at Wolverton, there used to be a great big board there, big as all that fireplace round there, with coloured soldiers, you know, in the uniform, coloured uniforms, infantry. And then you had the Scotland, with the Black Watch and all that with the kilts. And see, it was fascinating.